Could we see the beautiful game every 2 years instead of four? The world governing body FIFA wants to change the frequency of the World Cup. Not everyone's thrilled by the proposal. What will it mean for players and fans? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Sami Zeidan. The world governing football body FIFA is intensifying its push for a World Cup every other year. But the proposal has been widely criticised by some sports federations, football coaches and players. Those against the plan say switching from the four-year calendar could seriously affect players' mental and physical health, overshadow the women's edition of the tournament and affect the schedules of other sports. Both European and South American football bodies have threatened to boycott the World Cup if FIFA decides to go ahead. FIFA intends to reduce the number of qualifying and friendly matches to keep players from being overworked. A feasibility study is being carried out to look at the practicalities of reducing the World Cup cycle. 166 of FIFA's 210 national associations back the idea of further research into the proposed changes. FIFA President Gianni Infantino says the proposal will allow more countries to take part in the tournament.
A request from the FIFA Congress, approved by 88% of FIFA members, has asked us to analyze the possibility of reforming the international calendar of matches, when the national teams have to play, and if it's possible to play World Cups every 2 years. We have analyzed it from the point of view of soccer. Of course, it's possible, and of course, there are many advantages because we give more opportunities to many more countries to participate at the world level.
Opponents of the plan have accused FIFA of putting money ahead of sport. But the body's head of global football development says that's not the case.
I believe that the players want to play big games. What they don't want is to play small games, you know. And the big competitions is something that everybody wants to play, you know. If I tell you now you will be world champion, if, even if it's for 10 minutes, you will say yes. And giving more opportunities. In, today, if a country doesn't go to the World Cup, they have to wait for 8 years. You know, if a player is injured, he doesn't play for 8 years the World Cup. And so I just believe it's a reshaping of your mind because it's unusual. But as well, the perception of time has changed and the younger generation wants to be entertained much more. They want big events.
The International Olympic Committee has also weighed in on the proposed changes. The IOC has called for wider discussions over the plan, citing three major concerns.
The executive board of the International Olympic Committee takes note of FIFA's plans to change the football competition schedule and to hold the World Cup every 2 years. A number of international federations of other sports, national football federations, clubs, players' associations and coaches have expressed strong reservations and concerns regarding the plans to generate more revenue for FIFA, mainly for the following reasons. And there are three bullet points. Firstly, the impact on other sports. The increased frequency and timing for the World Cup would create a clash with other major international sports. This includes tennis, cycling, golf, gymnastics, swimming, athletics, Formula One, and many others. This would undermine the diversity and development of sport, other sports other than football. Point two, gender equality. The increase in men's events in the calendar would create challenges for the further promotion of women's football. And the third point, players' welfare. The plans, in particular, the doubling in the frequency of the World Cup, would create a further massive strain on the physical and mental health of the players. The IOC concludes the IOC shares these concerns and supports the calls of stakeholders of football, international sports federations and major event organisers for a wider consultation, including with athletes' representatives, which has obviously not taken place.
Well, let's bring in our guests into the show now. In Beirut, we have joining us Ilya Trojanovic. He's a strategic advisor at Dowley Sports. He's also a former consultant for the Qatar World Cup 2022 Supreme Committee. And from London, football writer Marcela Moray Araujo. Let's welcome you both to the show. Let me start with Ilya. Why does FIFA in the first place want to make the World Cup every 2 years? Is it just about the money?
I mean, that's the immediate counterclaim. With more games, you have more tickets sold, you have more branding, more sponsorships, more TV rights. So clearly there is more money with more games. But Arsene Wenger, ex-Arsenal coach and current head of football global development at FIFA, is actually saying that it's going to reduce the fatigue of the players, because essentially it's going to eradicate the international breaks, which we see every year in September, October, November and March. So what this plan intends to do is to only have a 4 to 5 week break in October when qualifiers would be played. And then at the end of, you know, every June, there would be a major tournament, be it a World Cup or in between World Cups, you'd have Euros or Copa Americas. But I'm sure we're going to talk about the calendar in a bit, so I won't jump the gun on this. But on
yeah, we definitely will get into the calendar. But let me take some of those points to Marcela. So more games, more money, less stress. What could possibly be wrong with a plan like that, eh, Marcela?
Well, I think intuitively, I don't like it. But when I try to argue rationally about the reasons why I don't like it, and it's a sort of knee-jerk opposition, I think that they are kind of ungrounded to a certain extent. Clearly, the money is a big factor, and the World Cup is FIFA's biggest business and its biggest brand, so it would be almost neglectful of them not to try and capitalize as much as possible, especially as other competitions are increasing in popularity and viewing figures and almost catching up with the World Cup, one could say. But at the same time, I'm not convinced that this idea that it would be... I think that the physical pressure on elite professional athletes to compete permanently is clearly taking its toll, and it has a detrimental side. And I'm not persuaded by this Wenger argument that it would produce less fatigue. I think perhaps one of the biggest reasons why it's, I wouldn't say a bad idea, but an idea worth scrutinising very carefully, is this notion that the qualifiers and the international dates will be scrapped. Because I think we forget that the World Cup is in fact the finals of a kind of ongoing competition. And the qualifiers are part of the thing itself. So to suddenly do away with international dates and have the qualifiers all squashed into a single week, I think will diminish the spectacle and also produce quite a lot of stress and fatigue on those players that are summoned for that week, which will inevitably be the best for each country. So I'm not persuaded about the logic of this, doing away with international qualifiers. And I think that's my main fear, is that the World Cup will morph into something so different from what it is at the moment that it will almost be unrecognisable. Although I can see why this is going to happen.
Let's take it back to Ilya and say, look, when you think about it in money terms, does FIFA have a point? I mean, it makes a loss typically 3 years out of four, and it makes money on the fourth year when there's a World Cup. Is this exactly just the way the market is driving it? It has to find a way to stay profitable more regularly.
So from 2017 to 2020, in those 4 years, FIFA generated $6.4 billion worth of revenue. 70% of that came in 2018 during the Russia World Cup. So what you said is, absolutely true. And what my panelist also said is true. I was just, rehashing what Arsene Wenger's rationale was for hosting a biennial World Cup. It's also worth noting that the only people who are promoting this are retired players and an ex-coach in Arsene Wenger. Most coaches would say exactly what was said, that it's actually going to make players more tired and is going to take away from their own downtime. But in the end, You have Champions Leagues every year. Copa America is biennial. Gianni Infantino even tried to draw a comparison to the Super Bowl, which I don't think sat too well with real football fans. But clearly, it's a way to generate more money.
Marcella, since two of FIFA's most powerful governing bodies, UEFA and CONMEBOL, they're opposed to this proposal. So regardless of what we might come up with in terms of is it a good idea or a bad idea, will FIFA ultimately be able to switch the frequency if two powerful governing bodies say we don't want this?
So I think what's really interesting is that we're seeing a shift in power amongst the governing bodies of football, but possibly in all industries. You know, we are in a kind of revolutionary moment in our history culturally. I do think football is part of the entertainment industry and part of the cultural life of a society. And I do sense CONMEBOL's literally clinging on to its power base for dear life at the moment. I think that inequities in funding, in infrastructure, in general kind of commercial nous and so on are very tipped in favour of Europe at the moment. And whereas maybe 20 years ago we were thinking of Africa as the future of football, we are now just literally seeing a weakening of CONMEBOL in the South American position. And I think we saw that very clearly reflected on the pitch in 2018, in the sense that it became quite quickly, instead of a World Cup, a kind of glorified Euro Cup with really mostly European countries in competition from a very early point, earlier than other World Cups. Will everyone negotiate? Will this World Cup maybe just become, instead of a biennial World Cup, a kind of intercontinental Super League or something? Will the champions of Africa get to play the champions of, you know, there's many permutations possible, and there are undoubtedly going to come reflected. I think what we're really seeing, and the comparison with the Super Bowl, although it's crass, is possibly very apt, is a huge move by FIFA to finally kind of cling its North American market and be the sport that the North American consumers love. And this has been going on for decades. It's not new. But, you know, from moving headquarters right to the States to placating the States and so on. And so inevitably, CONMEBOL and UEFA will try and say, no, well, we're not partaking of this, until they get a seat at the negotiating table and it becomes interesting for them, which I think it should be, and it could be if it's done properly.
So there might be a way to lure them in, I think, is what Marcella is saying. What about the African and Asian football associations, Ilya? They seem to be more positive on this idea than their European and South American counterparts, right?
That's true, and this is because it gives them a higher chance of actually qualifying for the World Cup. Let's not forget that starting in 2026, the World Cup is going to be a 48-team World Cup. It's no longer going to be 32. Now, just on that subject of changes, you know, big ideas, this has become something of a renaissance, at least in FIFA's eyes. They expanded the World Cup. They wanted to expand the Club World Cup. There were these considerations for shortening matches last summer. And so football is in this transitory period. But for Asian and African countries, the pro would be, yes, that they can qualify every 2 years. And with more teams in the World Cup, higher representation at the tournament. Now, on the flip side, one of the pros being floated around is that more countries, especially smaller countries, could host the World Cup if it's every 2 years. But I disagree with this, because if there's 48 teams who are going to make it in the end to the World Cup finals, then the host country is going to have not only the stadia to deliver, but the accommodation, hotels, the roads, etc., training grounds. So I feel like this would actually limit, because there's no preparation time in 2 years. So, you know, Qatar had 10 years to prepare. And then even when FIFA was pressuring Qatar to expand the World Cup to 48 teams, Qatar knew that this wasn't feasible. So I feel like it's a double-edged sword for them. They might get to play more, but you might not have a Japan, South Korea, or South Africa for a while.
All right, Marcela, I want to come back to a point that, which is, I think you were hinting at, that the game does need to develop and to change. Is there any alternative to this way if we're concerned in this show about the stress it's going to put on players, the stress it's going to put on host countries? Can they develop quick enough for that? What is the change? What is the alternative to this way of change then? Developing more professional club leagues, as some have suggested?
Well, I think the options are infinite. Like the game itself, all the permutations are possible. I think what would be a very nice thing to see happen is a lot of this money that the higher echelons of the elite game generate going back to grassroots, so that we continue to see football not just as the high end spectacle, but also the game that engages people in everyday life, and that it sometimes works better than other times, but on the whole, regulatory mechanisms that demand that certain amounts of the profits go back to grassroots are very important. And I think we have seen it done quite successfully in South America historically, and perhaps less so in other parts of the world. But at the same time, I don't think a biennial World Cup is the only option, and I also think it's symptomatic of a type of thinking among the higher market end of the industry, as the Super League that has failed, but I'm sure it's not the end of that. We haven't heard the end of that approach. So it's ways of thinking how to engage the absolute avid desire of people to consume football, which we've seen this European summer. For example, we had the Euro Cup and the Copa America coexisting, and in fact people watched games during the day and during the night, admittedly in many parts of the world aided by lockdowns and so on, which prevented other activities, but the desire to consume is apparently infinite. So it would be very bizarre to not think of a way in which this can be maximized. Right. What I think we need to keep an eye on, and fans organizations can work together with sports organizations and health experts and so on, is on the one hand to not over exploit the athletes, which I think we again have historically seen. They do then end their careers very young and in very frail physical condition. And on the other, not to saturate the marketing side and to kind of keep our respect and our right. love for the game itself
okay.
at the forefront.
Well, we're delighted now to be able to bring into the discussion Danny Jordan from Johannesburg. Danny's the president of the South African Football Association and former CEO of South Africa's World Cup in 2010. All right, so Danny, thanks for joining us now. We were talking a little bit about some of the concerns, the stress this might put on players, the stress it might put on hosts. Why do associations in Africa and Asia have a different perspective than those in South America and Europe? Are African associations, for example, not worried about these issues?
No, on the contrary, I think those are real issues. But we must look at what is the cause of those overload on the players, and where does it come from? Does it come from African competitions? No. Does it come from African club competitions? No. Where does it come from? It comes from the very people who complain of the overload, from Europe. Now, if you look at all the competitions in the different confederation, the highest number of competitions you'll find in Europe. UEFA has 23 competitions. Now, when in 2018 there was a proposal for a World Cup every 2 years, there was an objection from Europe on precisely the same point, that there's an overload on the players. Now, we don't then expect in 2018, in the same year, UEFA launched the Nations League. A league is a concept really for clubs. And here, for the first time in 2018, we have a league that's called the Nations League. And it generates 146 additional matches.
Right.
Now, where did the overload come from? And this year, we had the Euro finals and the Nations finals in the same year. Where does the overload come from?
Okay, let's take that point, if I can. Let me jump in and bring Ilya in to comment on that. Doesn't Danny have a point there? While it's easy to say, making the World Cup too frequent would represent the overload, the overload's already there, depending on what region and part of the world you look at.
Yeah, but let's not forget that it's not only Europe. Why is CONMEBOL also against it? This is because the Copa America and the European Championship and the Nations League, which I'll concede to Mr. Jordan, I'm not a great proponent of it, but that aside, the Copa America and the European Championship are way more prestigious tournaments than the African Cup of Nations. Even the Copa Libertadores and Sudamericana, as well as Champions League, of course, and Europa League, are much bigger than the continental competitions in Africa.
So given what you said, Ilya, is it really a battle between who makes the money then, whether it goes to regional cups and tournaments or international ones?
If I may, I think we need to go to the root of this, because at FIFA's Congress in May, where 166 federations voted in favor with only 22 against the proposal. It was a proposal put forward by Saudi Arabia.
Right.
So a month later, Saudi Arabia contracted Boston Consulting Group to basically help them land the World Cup or table a bid in 2030, with one source saying to think outside the box.
All right, we've got a couple of minutes left, and since Danny just joined us, I want to go back to Danny and ask this question. Danny, at the end of the day, what's the bottom line here? If European and South American football associations say they'll boycott any additional World Cups, does that really tie the hands of everyone, including African associations?
Look, this concept, football is a global sport. The majority of high-value players in Europe come from Africa. Only yesterday you saw what Jurgen Klopp said about an African player, Sadumani and Salah. And there are many.
Yeah, but do African associations have the clout and impact and influence of European and South American associations?
No. Well, let me finish. There cannot be the high-value global brand clubs in Europe without the high-value players there, and many of them come from Africa.
Right.
So therefore, for Europe to pick and choose what they like and what they don't like is undemocratic. They must come to the Congress and convince the Congress. Now, as soon as a proposal is not from Europe, it must not even be placed on the table. The okay. World Cup is 100 years old. What is the legacy of Africa? We are now in the qualification. We are battling to be top of our group. And then the 10 group will play five to go to the World Cup. Five out of 54 countries from Africa goes to the World Cup. You go back for 32 years. Africa did not participate in the World Cup. For another 48 years, Africa only had one representative in the World Cup. Today, Africa has five, Europe has 13. Now, is this the global sport that we want to take,
right,
or that we have? Can't we even look at what is tomorrow's World Cup? What is tomorrow's football? Is it the same like the last 100 years? Because that is a debate. But it's not surprising. Anyone who has benefited from a system over 100 years will resist even the concept of debating change
right,
and new proposals. That's okay. To be expected.
Okay. I'm afraid we are out of time. I know this is a really gripping topic. I'd like to continue, but we're going to have to stop here for now. I'm sure we'll be back again at some point to talk about this. For now, let's thank our guests, Ilya Trajanovic, Danny Jordan and Marcela Moray Araujo. And thank you too for watching. You can see the show again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, head over to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle there is @AJInsideStory. From me, Sami Zeidan, and the whole team here, for now, it's goodbye.